thank you for joining us on a day where we got a ton to get into. Peter, how are you, and what do you think of this matchup?
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, as I wrote the other day in my column, this is the reason why getting the top seed is so incredibly important. Because, put simply, you know, the Minnesota Vikings have to, after a very emotional five-period road win on Sunday, have to go home, take a few deep breaths, and then late Thursday have to get on an airplane and go and fly to San Jose, and then get ready to play a short week game against the number one seed in the NFC. The 49ers, on the other hand, have 13 days between games, or 12 days, however you'd count it, and essentially have a what I would call one of the most difficult six seeds in recent history coming to town. And on top of that, there's so many 49ers who've never been in a game like this before, so many important 49ers, not the least of whom is Jimmy Garoppolo. So it is going to be a great challenge. And in terms of 1-6 matchups, I guess I could look back at history. I haven't done this. I do not recall a 1-6 matchup that was that. And look, I think the 49ers are going to win the game. But, you know, I will not be shocked if the Vikings win this game, which is what you guys were getting to before.
Yeah, no, we are blowing all cautionary horns that this is truly two teams that run the football first, second, and third, play great defense, got a couple quarterbacks people are asking questions about, and even though they're on opposite ends of their spectrum in their careers, two coaches who know what they're doing.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, look, as I look at these two teams, look, the 49ers, you know, how stunning is it that the guy who came to the off-season camp and training camp as the number four running back, you know, Mostert, basically now is, you know, the war horse. And the other guys behind him, Breed and Coleman, are effective backs, and both, I think both are over 4 yards a carry. And so that altogether looks absolutely fine, and they've had an excellent year running the ball, and that's helped Jimmy Garoppolo hugely. But on the other side, you've got a team that, you know, the best single running back in this game obviously is going to be Dalvin Cook, and he's relatively healthy, probably not as healthy as the Niners backs, but I mean that's a huge player in this game, and to me, going to make it a very, very close game. The fact that both teams can run the ball, and this very well could come down to a battle of quarterbacks, one of whom has never won a playoff game, and one of whom has won one playoff game. And so I just think it's a fascinating test for both teams. And, you know, for Jimmy Garoppolo's first game in the playoffs, you know, I'll just make this point. Not that I don't think he's going to play well. I do think he's going to play well. But he's going to face one of the best pass rushes that he's faced all year. It's going to be a pass rush that all game really bugged Drew Brees. And was a very, very difficult test for Brees. And Brees, ultimately, the leading statistical quarterback in the 100-season history of the NFL, failed it. And he failed it in large part, I think, because of the great pressure he got. So, you know, that's going to be an absolutely key thing for them to allow Jimmy Garoppolo to breathe on Saturday.
Speaking of those pass rushes, I'm curious, right now, which quarterback do you think should be more concerned, the one with Danielle Hunter coming after him or the one with Nick Bosa coming after him?
Look, I think based on the depth of the defensive line, I would say I'd be more concerned if I was Kirk Cousins. But I saw the game the other day. And in that game the other day, the New Orleans Saints have a good offensive line. It's not great, but it's top 8 or 10 in the league. All right? And they could not protect Drew Brees. And that was to me, I mean, if you watch that game and watched it closely, I think one of the things that you realized is that this isn't a one-man job with the Minnesota Vikings. This is when I look at this team right now, and when I look at what Minnesota does on defense, okay, right now I believe that Danielle Hunter and Everson Griffin are you know, at least they're one or two in the NFL right now in terms of edge rush teams, you know, bookend rushers. But it isn't just that. I mean, Linval Joseph had an impactful game the other day coming from the interior. He is not your typical nose tackle. They had a hard time blocking Anthony Barr the other day. You know, Eric Kendricks is one of the underrated linebackers in this league. And one of the things that really helped them the other day, I thought, was that their coverage unit was better than it has been in recent weeks. And, I don't know. I look at this game, and I just say that the most important single unit in this game, in my opinion, is the San Francisco offensive line. If they give Jimmy Garoppolo time, the 49ers are going to win. And if they don't, I think it's going to be a very close game.
Turn your mic on, Ray. It's the playoffs. Come on.
Leave me alone, Dad. You mentioned Eric Kendricks, and the thing that jumps out at me is that he might be the linebacker in this league best equipped to take on George Kittle. Right. It seems like a silly question for those who have seen Kittle, but is that a much more even battle than people know, and is it in fact one that Kendricks could win?
Look, I'm a Pro Football Focus devotee. I've followed him and I've known about him for whatever, 10 or 12 years. And one of the things that I really respect is the rankings of their players who don't touch the ball. We all can judge the fact that George Kittle is either the best or second best tight end in football right now. He was for the second consecutive year, he was my all-pro tight end. I think he is a tremendous player. He is the person singly most responsible for winning their most important game of the year, which was the game at Minnesota, which allowed them to be in the horse race for the one seed by the time they got to week 17. So when Pro Football Focus tells me that Eric Kendricks had a better year than DeMario Davis, Bobby Wagner, Dante Hightower, Jalen Smith, Deion Jones of Atlanta, and every other middle/inside linebacker in the league, except for a future Hall of Famer in Luke Kuechly, I sit up, I perk my ears up, and I take notice. And I think in coverage, he is very, very good. And, Ray, you just hit it on the head. I don't think it's going to be exclusively that he'll be on Kittle all the time. But I think he could be on the backs. I think he could have some battles with Juszczyk in this game. But he is a guy who right now is a huge factor in a game that is the most important that the 49ers have played in a long time.
Peter King here on 95.7 The Game. We get asked who Jimmy Garoppolo is all the time, even by 49ers fans who watch him win a game. They still want to know, is this guy a good quarterback or not? But if it's like that for Garoppolo, what's it like to live Kirk Cousins' life, who seems to get no respect, and that's the way it is in Minnesota half the time?
Well, I don't mean to be snide about this, and I do not mean it in a really snide way, but Kirk Cousins, in my opinion, in many ways, gets what he deserves, because until Saturday, or until Sunday, rather, you know, he hadn't really won a mega game in his life. And, you know, the way I look at this is that, you know, if you want the great credit of being a great NFL quarterback, you've got to play great at big, big times. And, you know, I look back at this year during the season, okay, and, you know, when they played their biggest games this year, you know, game 15 against Green Bay, he did not play well. He didn't show up, threw for, whatever, 120 yards or something like that, did not play well. Go back to early in the year, Green Bay and Chicago. Those two games, a combined one touchdown pass with a lousy rating. And look, I think he righted his personal ship as the season went on and had some very good games this year. And he's being helped a lot by the fact that last year he threw 600 and some passes, and this year he threw like 440 passes. So they recognize, the Vikings recognize, let's give this guy a very strong pounding running game, and that's going to make Kirk Cousins a lot better, and it has. But, again, there are going to be some games in the playoffs. They needed him down the stretch of that game on Sunday, and he delivered. He threw a beautiful ball to Adam Thielen, and then a good jump ball that, you know, that Kyle Rudolph caught for the winning touchdown in that game. And so I like Cousins. But for him to be recognized as one of the greats in this game, you know, he's got to stack some games like he played the other day.
I think we all kind of felt over the course of the second half of the season that the Niner defense impressed us less than it had early in the season. And there may be a variety of reasons for that between attrition and better competition and what have you. I'm wondering how much of the first half of the season best defense we've seen in a while mojo comes back with the return of Dee Ford and Quan Alexander?
You know, I think it depends on what's going to happen. You know, what kind of physical condition, especially Quan Alexander is in. And again, I'm not in any way saying that this is a, this is an unimportant ad. Of course it isn't. But I think that John Lynch, Adam Peters, Kyle Shanahan have done a very good job drafting, particularly in the last couple of years. And in so doing, they have made they have fortified that linebacker position. And when I think about that linebacker position, I mean, I look at the biggest tackle of this season, and that's Dre Greenlaw, and, you know, on Jacob Hollister. And look, that's one tackle. Everybody can make one play. But I think, you know, the young linebackers that the 49ers have brought in have done a really good job. And, again, I'm not diminishing the importance of Quan Alexander. But, the game, this week's game, is not going to be decided by a huge play from Quan Alexander. I think it's going to be the offensive line, and it's Jimmy Garoppolo making those plays that they're desperately going to need in this game.
I want to ask this, even though it's not about this weekend, because the last several days, we've seen three unusual coaching hires, and for very different reasons. It seems, almost from where I'm sitting, like owners are kind of just going, well, whoever comes in the door first and will say yes to whatever we throw at them is our guy, except in Carolina, where David Tepper hasn't yet realized you don't have to throw huge money at the first guy who comes along. Yeah, are these the most unusual, taken as a group, the most unusual set of hires you've seen in, I don't know, however many years? You can define that yourself.
Today was the weirdest day in the coaching search history in the 36 years that I've covered the NFL. The Carolina Panthers despite the fact that only two of nine coaching hires from guys who were exclusively college coaches. So I'm not including Pete Carroll or Bill O'Brien. But of the nine guys who've graduated from college football to the NFL in this century, there's only one who's ever won a playoff game. Only one, and that's Jim Harbaugh. There's only one other one, barely, Chip Kelly, who's exited pro football with a winning record. And so I think, or I'm sorry, who exited his first team, which is the Philadelphia Eagles, with a winning record. He obviously doesn't have a winning record after his year in San Francisco. But I only raise that point to say that with that as a backdrop, with 15-17 Nick Saban as a backdrop, the Carolina Panthers gave the richest contract ever to a first-year, first-time NFL head coach. 7 years, $60 million. And you know what? I like Matt Rhule. I truly like Matt Rhule. I think he's got a chance to be very, very good in the NFL. He's smart and all that. And you know what? What do I care? $60 million doesn't apply to the salary cap. But essentially, what they're doing is paying whatever, $8.7 million a year to a guy who has had 1 year of coaching experience in the NFL as an assistant coach with the New York Giants 7 years ago. And again, this is all going to sound like I'm criticizing Matt Rhule. I am not. I'm simply making the point that David Tepper, who's very smart in business, I have absolutely no idea why he felt the need to give the head coach at Baylor University $60 million over 7 years. Not my money. Don't care. I just think that this is a guy who probably is going to be rebuilding this team, retooling this team, whether it's with or without Cam Newton. There's no guarantee. I mean, Ron Rivera with this same organization over the last 4 years was under 500. And so without a playoff win. So that was shocking in and of itself, okay, the money involved. But to have the New York Giants hire the New England Patriots special teams coach who did one NFL interview this year, and to the best of my knowledge, and again, I might be proven wrong in the next couple of days, didn't have anybody else other than some interest from his alma mater, Mississippi State, some interest, not knock down your door interest, that for the New York Giants to bypass an interview with a guy who has won six Super Bowls as Tom Brady's the Tom Brady whisperer in New England, to not even interview Josh McDaniels for this job, I have to tell you, and with nobody else apparently knocking on the door of Joe Judge, I'm beyond, I don't know what to say.
Peter, was the Joe Judge hire a panic reaction to Matt Rhule saying yes to Carolina when the New York Giants probably expected him to come?
No, I do know that the Giants had set up, this interview with Josh McDaniel, and without any reason to cancel it, there's no reason to cancel this interview because nobody is going to hire Joe Judge. They canceled this interview with Josh McDaniels. They don't even know what they think of Josh McDaniels. And I'm flabbergasted. I just am. But again, look, the upshot of this is very simple, that the Cleveland Browns have the only job left. They should be in no hurry to fill that position. There's no reason whatsoever for them to rush to judgment. And somebody told me today the Browns are determined to make a hire by Saturday. And I just said, Browns are going to brown. There's no reason for them to hire anybody. I mean, how in the world are they to know? What if Robert Saleh, what if they hire whoever, Josh McDaniels, who I think definitely should be a head coach. And then Robert Saleh holds the Vikings to 16 yards on Saturday. And there's Robert Saleh, you know, just saying, what? I don't get a job? What if Eric Bieniemy, the offensive coordinator, after the last two offensive coordinators for the Kansas City Chiefs, Doug Peterson, wins a Super Bowl 2 years ago. You know, Matt Nagy, the NFL Coach of the Year last year. And they did the exact same thing that right now is being done by Eric Bieniemy, who Andy Reid told me about 2 weeks ago is one of the best leaders of any coaches he's ever seen. He said he changes lives, and he can't even get to first base. So, I mean, we could get into the African-American thing, but it appears that we will exit, and we will enter after one century of NFL football with 73% of the players in the NFL black. Three of the 32 coaches in the NFL will be black. And I kind of hope I'm wrong there, but I'm just saying the NFL is flunking that test horrendously.
So from Joe Judge to a guy who's only 4 or 5 years older than him, Tom Brady, where do you think Tom Brady will play next year, if at all? And do you think Bill Belichick is guaranteed to be a Patriot?
Bill Belichick's going to coach next year. I spent about 10 minutes with Brady after the game alone Saturday night. And he told me he's playing football in 2020, unless nobody wants him. So I don't know where he's going to play, but I do think, you know, I've seen very reliable, respectable, very, very smart football people say in the last 48 hours, oh, he's going back to New England. He won't play anywhere else and all that. I mean, that's just not true. it's not true. Tom Brady is going to strongly consider playing somewhere else. And I believe that Bill Belichick, given his druthers, would like to start not over, but would not like to spend $30 million on the cap on a 43-year-old quarterback. So you've seen Bill Belichick do it twice with mega quarterbacks. You know, with Bernie Kosar in the 90s when he was the coach of the Browns, you know, they wanted to hang him in effigy in Cleveland when he did that. Kosar was the hero of the city. And then he did it when Drew Bledsoe got healthy with the Patriots in 2001. Now, look, he was absolutely proven right on the Bledsoe-Brady decision. But that all I'm simply raising the point that in my opinion, Bill Belichick is absolutely not afraid to make the painful call. It's funny, I interviewed Charlie Weiss, who coached with the Patriots for 5 years, the first 5 years of the Belichick reign. He had Brady for his first 5 years. And he told me today that the thing about Bill Belichick is he will feel the same about Tom Brady as he will about Devin McCourty. Now, Devin McCourty is an excellent safety and probably the leader of that defense. He is a free agent this year. And what Weiss meant was he would be as pained to lose Devin McCourty as he would Tom Brady, because it pains him, but he also understands that football's a business and he's got to do what's best for the long-term interests of the Patriots.
Just quickly, if you can, what is Tom Brady looking for? A chance to win or a big paycheck? And can he find both in the same place anywhere that is quickly to identify?
I definitely don't think he's looking for the big paycheck. I think he's looking to get paid for what he can contribute at this point in his career, which I don't have any idea what that ends up being, 25, 30, 32. I don't know what. But with the cap around $200 million, if you invest in Tom Brady, you're investing in him to play for a year or two. In my opinion, the best place for him is the Chargers for so many reasons. They need him probably worse than he needs them. But the Chargers have a few things that Tom Brady would really want. They have a very good backfield. I think Eckler is more important to that offense right now than Melvin Gordon. And they've got two tremendous wide receivers. Tom Brady this year had none. I'm not saying that Julian Edelman isn't good, but he was hurt most of the year. And he did not have a great, I don't care if he caught 100 balls, which he did. He didn't have a very good year. And, you know, the New England Patriots need to invest in the offensive infrastructure to get Tom Brady to come back. And that is why I wonder if Bill Belichick will want him back, because they would have to spend a lot of money to keep him and to go out and get the offensive pieces to make Brady happy.
Peter, thank you. Hopefully next week we are previewing the 49ers hosting an NFC title game. Always appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot, man.